You could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us. We appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. Again, that's on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. That's T as in Taka, S as in Sangria, M as in Margaritas. Kennedy Miller.
Find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_. Again, _Kennedy as in the former president, John F., and the former wrestler, Mr. Kennedy. KennedyMiller_.
All right. Kennedy Miller, it's been a bit of a minute since the last time we've done this show. The NBA playoffs are almost out of the first round. A whole lot of entertaining matchups. So, Kennedy, just like give me a sense of, you know, what have been your early thoughts and reactions to the first round of the playoffs? And what has been, in your opinion, the most entertaining series?
Well, I mean, I think my early reactions to the playoffs is that a lot of teams are playing good basketball. And you've seen a lot of high scoring outputs from a lot of guys that are up and coming stars. Luka, Donovan Mitchell, Jamal Murray have all put on great shows in the bubble, and it's been really fun and impressive to watch, especially as a basketball fan. I think easily the most impressive series to me, or the most entertaining, was the one that just ended tonight. Utah and Denver going to Game 7 with, you know, Donovan Mitchell putting up 57 the first game and Jamal Murray putting up these 50-point games. It's been incredibly impressive to see these two go at it. And, you know, hats off to Utah. They played their butt off. I didn't give Utah a chance to make it out the first round after Bogdanovich had gotten hurt and elected to have season-ending surgery. I thought they were done. And so for them to come out and play the way that they did against a team that they were the underdog, Denver, you know, was a top three seed all year. And for them to be up 3-1, I was really impressed by the way that they played. So I think that was a series that impressed me the most. You got, you know, teams like the Mavs were impressive. They put up a fight. I didn't think they put up that much of a fight. Obviously, losing Porzingis was a big blow for them, but I think that that was a good series. My Lakers took care of business. Portland was kind of pushed out of proportion. Good team. Dame was playing out of his mind, you know, to will them into being that eighth seed, but I knew when push came to shove, the Lakers had two top five players in the league, and it's going to be really tough to stop those two, especially when they've been the wire-to-wire number one seed all year. So I'm really excited for this second round, though, for the matchups. I don't know if the Lakers are going to see Houston. I really don't know. If I had to bet money, I would say that the Rockets will win, but Oklahoma City has put up a fight. Shout-out to G. Shout out to Garrett Newton from the Stadium Status Podcast, because he was the first one that called this, because we were in there, and at the beginning of the year, he said if Chris Paul was healthy for at least 70 games and Steven Adams played, they would make the playoffs. And I said, no way. No way in hell would they make the playoffs in the Western Conference. And for them to make it to the fifth seed and to push Houston to seven games with or without Russell Westbrook is amazing. And if the Thunder beat the Houston Rockets, Alex Goodwin, with all that happened last year with James Harden and Chris Paul, with them losing at home game 6, no Kevin Durant, to the Golden State Warriors, and then for James Harden to get to the podium and say, I know what we have to do, and they trade Chris Paul, if Chris Paul comes back and beats them with this team, I don't know what Rockets fans will do with themselves.
Oh, I'll tell you what they're going to do. Some of them, and we know a couple of them, some of them are going to be ready to jump off a roof. Because, and I give it to Rockets. And the thing about Rockets fans, here's what I don't understand sometimes, is that they talk themselves into this year in and year out. Year in and year out. When the Houston Rockets and James Harden and Mike D'Antoni have not earned the benefit of the doubt in that way. They flat out have not. Now, did they start off this series playing really well against the Thunder? They did, but I think the thing about the bubble is, and what's really unique about it is, in most playoff series, there's home court, you know. So let's say a team's down 2-0, and then, you know, they're going back to their home court for games 3 and 4, all right? That home court advantage can give you a bit of a boost, a bit of a push, right, and things like that. Or even in the Denver-Utah series, being down 3-1, most times that thing's going to be over in 5 or 6. But on a neutral site, when it's, you take out all the other extra noise, all the other people in the stands, and it's just basketball, you're going to find out who the better basketball team is. And, like, the entire atmosphere around the bubble and just playoff-wise, have you ever gone to, like, Fondy Rec Center in Houston?
Yep.
Or, like, the Drew League or something? Like, it just feels like basketball. Like, not a whole lot of hoopla, not a whole lot of none of that. It's just high-level basketball players playing basketball. And the thing about Houston that you mentioned, what are they going to do? They got to blow this thing up. And most times I'm not a fan of blowing the whole thing up. What else is there to do at this point? You've traded Chris Paul. You traded Capella. You got Robert Covington. They gave up 6 years' worth of first-round picks. I mean, to get rid of Capella, to get Covington, and to get Russell Westbrook. To go out in the first round or maybe the second round at the best?
With a team with hardly any young guys. And then you talked about, you know, the lack of draft picks. It's almost like these past couple of times LeBron has left somewhere. You look at when he left Miami in 2014, they had been so set on trying to get to championships, which they did and which they won too. But when he left, there's no cap space. There's no first-round picks. And now you got like a veteran roster that has looked like it's capped out because they've been competing for so long. Same thing when he left Cleveland in 2018. No more cap space.
Oh.
No more first-round picks. Old. And you've got guys that you've signed to extensions to try and keep on winning that are now past their prime. So now you're in a terrible situation.
They re-signed Eric Gordon to an extension in September. 4 years for $75 million.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to want him on that contract, right? Russell Westbrook is on a really bad contract. And given the fact that a lot of Russ's game is built upon speed and athleticism, and that, and Russ can't shoot, and in year 11 or 12, I have no indication to believe that Russell Westbrook is going to find a jump shot. So Russ is going to age really poorly. Do you remember how in Allen Iverson's last 2 years, what it looked like?
Yeah.
And how quick Allen Iverson was out of the league once, like, the drop-off came? Like, it wasn't a gradual drop-off with the guy. You know how Tim Duncan had a gradual drop-off? Like, you slowly started to see the skills decline. But San Antonio had other pieces around him, so it wasn't just horrific.
Yeah.
Iverson's drop-off was so quick, he was out of the league in 2 years. And I think Westbrook's going to have that same kind of drop-off. The problem is the contract he's on is exorbitant, right? So win, lose, or draw, they got problems there. You know, I do want to kind of switch gears to the other team in Los Angeles. You know, the L.A. Clippers, Kennedy Miller. I know you've been wanting to do this for like a week or so. So, Kennedy Miller, I'm going to give you the floor to talk about your favorite player. Playoff P, Paul George. Kennedy Miller, go on and get the jokes off. Go on.
I don't have much jokes because he's kind of resurrected himself the last couple of games of that series. But it's a famous Dennis Green quote. He is who I thought he was. Paul George has never changed to me. I saw all these tweets, you know, called, what's wrong with Paul George? This is nothing new to me. I know Paul George. I know what he does in big games. I know what he doesn't do in big moments. He's not that guy. Supremely talented. He's really talented. Really handles the ball well for somebody over 6'7". Really good defender. Has a nice touch with the ball. But for some strange reason, Paul George, you cannot rely on him in big games. You can't. He's almost in the perfect situation for himself. He's not carrying a team. He doesn't necessarily have to guard the best player all game long. And he doesn't have the burden of the franchise on his shoulders. And yet, somehow, he still is messing up. He went through a 3-game stretch where it was like, Alex, what the heck? Like, I mean, it was looking like this was literally the worst option for Kawhi Leonard. I know he wanted to stay at home, But it was looking like him choosing to go to the Clippers to play with Paul George was the worst option he could have had. Because remember, he had three options. He would have gone to the Lakers with LeBron and Anthony Davis, and they would have just ran through everybody. He could have stayed in Toronto, and with the way that it's looking in the bubble now, you can't really tell me that Kawhi on the Raptors wouldn't be the favorite in the bubble. With how good the Raptors have played, with how good Kawhi has played, he played amazing. And then to go to the Clippers and play with playoff piss. You know, I should have had that trademarked, Alex, because now everybody was calling him that, you know, during these last three games that he was playing bad. I was like, I said playoff piss at Alex's house last year.
I think it might have been two or three years ago. It's been a while.
I'm sorry. I said that 2 years ago at your apartment in Denton. When, after playoff piss, had 5 points in a closeout game against Utah. Like I said, he has a history. I can look up the numbers and go through the closeout games that he's been in and the numbers that he put up in elimination games. And it's not anything superstar worthy. He's a star. He's a Robin. But I don't know if he's going to be a good enough Robin to lead them to a championship this year.
Hey, man, I'm going to tell you what. Whatever they did to get him ready for Game 5 and Game 6, they need to do it again. Okay? So, like, it's like all of a sudden he can play again because he couldn't throw a rock in the ocean Games 2 through 4. Like, he was god-awful, right?
And here's the thing. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know how sometimes, like, you might be not so good at something, then all of a sudden you seem really good, and be like, well, what happened? And somebody's like, well, you know, I just had some real special motivation, right? I got a quick story. When I was in the sixth grade, Kennedy Miller, I was supposed to be taking the standardized test in math in the state of Texas, the tax test, right? I am not good at math. I'm horrible at math. I failed it 1 year. And so that the next year, I'm up there supposed to be taking a math tax test, and I am not taking it seriously. I'm doing these little tax, like a little practice packets or whatever. I'm BSing them. I'm not really trying to do it or whatever. My mom was like, you need to focus on this packet and do this right because you're not good at math. And I'm not trying to hear it, not trying to hear it. I'm doing horrible on this packet, right? My mama look at me, and she said dead to me, the next prime you get wrong, I swear to God, I'm going to beat your ass. So I'm halfway thinking she just talking, right? I get that next problem wrong. Kennedy Miller, my mama looked up at me. And she said, let's go. And then she proceeded to drag me, pull me up out my chair, and drag me across the floor by my right ankle. And I'm in the middle of the house. I'm hollering, like, somebody help me, please. Help, 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 help. Right? Thank God for my daddy. He saved me. Kennedy Miller, when I tell you I got on that test on that Tuesday, and I only missed two questions. I missed two questions and two questions only. I feel like that's the type of that happened to Paul George in between games 4 and 5. I think Kawhi Leonard cussed him out.
So, I mean, my thing with Paul George is it'd be different if he was playing an elite defensive team like the Bucks or the Raptors or something like that. But it's not like the Mavericks have many defensive stoppers. That's my thing. That's what, on the flip side of it, that's what made what Luka was doing so impressive, because look at the numbers. Oh, the Mavericks have this, I think they have the number one offensive rating of all time or something like that.
Yep.
You know, really impressive. But I expected this to be a 5-game series. Because I thought the Clippers would be really physical with Luka. And at the end of the day, I thought they had two guys that they could throw at him. And really, they threw Marcus Morris at him for the most. But I thought they had two elite defenders that would slow him down and make it really tough. And what he was doing was pretty impressive considering who was guarding him. Paul George, on the other hand, was struggling with Tim Hardaway Jr. and Dorian Finney-Smith.
and Steph Curry were giving him the moves.
Bro, did you see Steph Curry call him a
I did.
Now that's personal right there. Now we all know that's boy. I know he's and that's for my wife.
Yep.
Seth Curry said, "I'm standing up for my wife's honor." Bro, I got a question. Imagine when Doc Rivers' daughter comes into the facility to say hi. What did she do when she sees Paul George? All right,
that's what I'm saying. Like, that was a weird. Was that a love triangle, love square?
Hexagon.
You know, because he's dating Doc Rivers' daughter, who, by the way, looks too much like Doc Rivers to be attractive to me. She looks too much like Glenn, okay? Little Glennisha is what I'll call her, because I don't know her name.
I think it's Callie.
Thank you, Callie. So, Paul George is dating Callie. He cheats on her with a stripper. Gets a stripper pregnant. Then goes and wipes the stripper. And then ends up on her daddy's team. While meanwhile, she rebounds with a Curry, Seth Curry, and they end up playing each other in the first round. Seth is playing against his father-in-law, who's coaching her ex-boyfriend.
Bro, here's what I want to know. Like, I ain't gonna lie, Doc Rivers is a better man than me.
Absolutely.
Because I ain't gonna front, I'd have shot Paul George. I'd have shot him. You ain't gonna treat my baby like that. That whole situation to me is a hot mess. And like, Paul George had way too much on his mind. In that post game interview he did after game 5, Paul George sounded like he was talking to either a Catholic priest or his therapist. Because he was telling us, giving us way too much information.
They have been killing him. They have been killing him on social media. And you know he saw it. You know he saw it. He had been getting heat. Because it's different. It's different when you're in Indiana. And, you know, you ain't really. Because that expectations ain't there. It's different when you're in Oklahoma City. Especially when you're playing behind Russell Westbrook. Because the expectations ain't really there. And those two teams. You can maybe make the case for Indiana, I would. But those two teams weren't championship contenders. Know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
This team, you're in L.A. I don't care if you're the Lakers or the Clippers. You're in L.A. Now you got the bright lights. And you're supposed to be a contender and one of the favorites to win a championship. And if you listen to the right or wrong person, in my opinion, the Clippers going to win it. So he's got to show up. And when you don't produce, what was it, 3 straight games? Shooting like 27% from the field or whatever he was shooting? You're going to get some flack. You're going to get some flack. And Alex, I wouldn't be surprised if he did it again. I think next round, they're going to win in 5. I think they're going to beat Denver in 5. I think it's going to be, I don't see Denver putting up that much of a fight against the Clippers.
Really?
But that next round, if Paul George has 3 straight games shooting like that, they ain't getting out of it. I'm like Charles Barkley. I can guarantee they ain't getting out.
We got to leave it right there, but don't you worry. We will be right back with more of the Game Plan Podcast on the other side of the break. Don't go too far. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Follow the show on Twitter, Gameplan TSM. That's T as in Tacoma, S as in Seattle, M as in Maryland. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
They find me on Twitter at underscore Kennedy Miller underscore. Again, underscore Kennedy, as in the former President John F. and the former wrestler Mr. Kennedy. Kennedy Miller underscore.
All right. All right. We're recording this podcast on the evening of September the 1st, 2020. So about a week ago, Kennedy Miller, the NBA players, led by the Milwaukee Bucks, decided they were going to strike in response to the shooting of Jacob Blake, a black man who was shot 7 times in the back in front of his children after trying to break up a fight. I believe he survived, but he's now paralyzed, if I have that correctly.
I believe so.
And I, first off, I have to kind of just make this point. Do you, Kennedy Miller, do you remember about 3 months ago when the whole world was on fire after George Floyd's death?
Yes.
You remember how everybody put out all these statements? We stand with the black community and all that other good stuff. All that, you know, performative activism. You remember that?
Yes, sir.
And now that the NBA has gone down to Orlando and done the whole bubble thing, and the NBA has done they've gone to great efforts to make this entire Black Lives Matter thing their marketing campaign for the last 2.5 months. And I must say this, the NBA is all good with activism and all that other good stuff as long as they get to shape the messages coming out of it, right? Right? When Jimmy Butler decided he was going to come out there and not have anything on the back of his jersey because he said that would signify that in the eyes of white America, once I take this jersey off, I'm nothing. The NBA sent him back to the locker room, told him to go put his jersey on. Go put on a jersey with his name on the back of it, right? So everybody's all good when they can control the narrative, right? What the Milwaukee Bucks did is they took back the narrative. What they did, they didn't ask for permission. They just did what they thought was right. And I must say, they risked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot. And kudos to the other teams and other players for standing with them as well. But what I do want to do here, Kennedy Miller, I do want to say this. How are some of these owners and some of these large major corporations going to say they stand with the black community and they are down with the black community in their fight against systemic racism and all this other good stuff when they donate money to Donald Trump?
Go ahead. Let the people know. Get on your soapbox.
I mean, how does that work? Because the amount of cognitive dissonance it takes to, on one hand, say you stand with your black employees in their fight for social justice, you donate money to the dude who's against said justice they're fighting for. Like, how does Bob Kraft have a criminal justice reform organization with Jay-Z, Roc Nation, and Meek Mill in the whole nine yards, yet he giving Trump his money? Like, the Detroit Pistons owner, he is a part of the prison industrial complex. Like, he owns one of the companies that regulates inmate phone calls. Right, he's one of those folks that's charging folks $10, $12, $15 a minute. Like, that guy profits off of mass incarceration. How come we ain't brought the boots to him yet?
Yep.
How come we ain't brought the boots to like Jerry Reinsdorf, who's donating money to a dude who spoke at the RNC last week, who speaks against defunding the police and support for law enforcement? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And my next thought is this: in the last couple of months, often the talking points are people say things like, we need to have a dialogue, we need to have a conversation, and all these other things, have difficult conversations. Kennedy Miller, do white people in power seem willing to have these conversations?
No.
Do the police seem like they willing to talk to us?
Absolutely not.
So what is we doing? Why? You know what I mean? And people oftentimes come up with the idea of criminal justice reform and police reform. What about this looks to anybody like it can be fixed? What about this looks like it can be slightly tweaked at all? What up? Like, does that make any sense?
Yes, sir.
Getting more black police chiefs ain't going to do a damn bit of good as long as the white supremacist power structure that is still in place is still there. That would be the equivalent of, let's say, Kennedy Miller, let's say I live in a house that's condemned, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the house, like the state said, yo, this house is uninhabitable. There's asbestos. There's mold. The foundation is all messed up. It is unsafe for people to live in here. What if I were to then slap a fresh coat of paint on the house and get some new furniture in the house?
Still gonna be the same stuff.
Yeah, like
just look better.
Aesthetically, it just looks a little bit better, but the same structural issues will remain. That's the same thing with people trying to reform the police, right? So no amount of implicit bias training will help. No amount of getting more police officers who look like the community will help, right? Because when the system is fundamentally, inextricably going to work against you, you can't have it no more.
I agree.
Am I making sense here? I know I just went off on a long tangent. And I know I went 50 million places at once, but does that make any sense?
Making total sense, man. And you were spot on. I'm glad you got on this soapbox. Do you have anything else you would like to add?
Man, I was actually going to say, so now that I'm here.
There you go.
See, I feel like a Baptist preacher now. I got I got two more points and I'm going to take my seat.
Go ahead.
Right? So, you know how people always say they want their politics out of their sports and all this other good stuff?
When it's fitting for them.
Yes. Donald Trump has no problem inserting himself into sports, as he did this morning when he said he called the Big Ten commissioner in an effort to try to get the Big Ten to play football this fall. And he only did this, mind you, Wisconsin, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, all swing states. All of them. Like, he ain't said a damn thing about the Pac-12 coming back to play because he know he ain't got no chance of winning California. And the rest of them flyover states over there don't nobody care about, right?
Right.
Those folks aren't cool with politics in their sports when it suits them. Yet, Kelly Loeffler, the lady who owns the Atlanta Dream, she was all cool with using her basketball team as a prop in an effort to win an election. Right? And those folks, instead of having the conversation that everybody says needs to happen to end racism, they're over there telling you at every turn they don't want to talk to you about this stuff. We ain't trying to hear you about this stuff. And that's the thing about racism. I think a lot of people need to understand. Ending racism is not the job of black people. It is not the job of the Hispanic community. Just in the same way that ending misogyny and patriarchy is not the job of women to do, right? Ending homophobia is not the job of the LGBTQ community to do. It is the job of those that are in power. It is the job of the oppressor to stop oppressing, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, that is easy as pie, because if we could fix it, we'd have fixed this a long time ago. Like, if you tell black people, hey, man, we can get in here and fix racism. We need all black people at the meeting at 6:15. Black folks be outside at 5:45. Orderly. Ready. Like, what we got to do. This is not a everybody come together and fix it. This is a white people need to fix this type of problem. Like, the NFL owner said they're going to put in the end zone in racism. It's on all of us. No. It's not on all of us. It's on all of you. This is on you. And how is the NFL going to talk about end racism and they the racist?
These are solid points.
I done made my 2 points, guys. And now I'm going to take my seat. This is the game.
Thank y'all for coming to this TED Talk.
Yeah, really. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. This is Game Plan Podcast. We could be back to the sports in the very next segment. Don't go too far. This is the Game Plan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, it's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Tom, S as in Sarah, M as in Mother. Follow the show on Twitter at Game Plan TSM as well. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_. Again, _Kennedy, as in the former president, John F., and the former wrestler, Mr. Kennedy, KennedyMiller_.
All right. All right. So, Kennedy Miller, we are now getting into the second round of the NBA playoffs. We're going to go through and I'm going to get your thoughts and your predictions.
Okay.
All righty, to start things off, we're going to go Miami and Milwaukee. What was your thoughts on game one, and who do you think is going to win the series, and in how many games?
So, I believe that Miami will actually beat Milwaukee in 6 games. Giannis is great. I said from the jump, I feel like the Bucks are a really great regular season team. I don't think that they match up well with Miami for a couple of reasons. Number one, Miami has a lot of guys that they can throw on Giannis that have the size, quickness, veteran savvy, athleticism to guard him or to contain him. You're not going to stop Giannis totally, but Bam, by most defensive metrics, has done the best job on Giannis this year. There's a reason why they're the only team so far that beat the Bucks 3 times this year. They're well coached. They're physical. They like to play defense. And they're going to play the right way. And the Bucks, if they had a weakness on defense, because they're a really good defensive team, if they had a weakness, they want to pack the paint so much. They want to stop guys from getting easy layups. They give up a lot of wide open threes. Well, who is the second best 3-point shooting team in the NBA? It's the Miami Heat. So it's just a bad matchup, because I feel like at the end of games, if you're successfully clogging the paint and Giannis is having trouble scoring, who do you look for? And really, the point that I'm trying to make is I don't trust Chris Middleton. I don't think Chris Middleton can be your second best player on a championship team. I'm not going to ridicule him like I do Paul George, because he's not put on that look. But Bleacher Report did make him a top 10 player, what was it, a month ago, for some stupid reason. But Chris Middleton cannot be your second best player on the championship team. And your third best player is Eric Bledsoe. I don't know what the hell I'm going to get out of him any given night. So that's my thing with the Bucks. Now, I mean, could he get past them? Maybe. I mean, I think Giannis will have to have some big games. I think Chris Middleton will have to have a really big game. But game one just kind of told me what I already predicted before the series started. Heat in 6.
This is a tough one for me. It's a really tough one because Milwaukee's well coached. Well coached, well put together basketball team. However, at the end of games, who do I trust more at the end of a ball game? Jimmy Butler or Giannis? I'm going to say this. Yo, give me Jimmy Butler every day and twice on Sunday, man. That dude is something different. And I've been saying that for the longest time. Right. And can I take this moment right quick to laugh at 76ers fans right quick? Like, y'all didn't want to keep Jimmy Butler, and instead y'all gave Tobias Harris and Al Horford the world. And where'd that get you? Like, you know how some dudes are afraid of the big moment? They start to tighten up, start to tense up. You pass them about the end of a ball game, they get it right out of their hands like they don't want it.
Yep.
Jimmy Butler's the exact opposite. He's like, oh no, I live for this right here, baby. Give me the ball. Move out the way. Like that dude, Jimmy Butler. And I think that's really like the margins with these two teams are that slim. Because I think Bam matches up the best with Giannis. He's as tall and as physically strong, right, to give Giannis a whole lot of trouble. Giannis is still going to get his buckets, and I think the games are going to be close. But at the end of a game, who do I trust to make a big shot? I got to go Jimmy. And I think Jimmy's going to do that. Heat in 7.
And this Bucks team is still, they're still growing. You know, it's no real knock against them. I mean, he's going to get some flack because he's the MVP and Defense Player of the Year. I already told you, I don't think he deserves Defense Player of the Year. I don't understand how one person has 50 more steals and 80 more blocks on the season and he doesn't get it. But that's neither here nor there. That's Anthony Davis, by the way. But, you know, I think the thing is Giannis is going to have to find some type of reliable
scoring option besides barreling to the rim in the playoffs. Because he's not going to be able to get that. And Orlando provided the blueprint. They just didn't have enough talent. They're going to wall up. These teams are going to wall up, and they're going to force you to shoot it. And another thing, it's one thing if you were just barreling to the rim and then getting to the free throw line and making free throws, but he went 4 of 12. So now you, even if you're doing what you want to do in the fourth quarter, we're just going to foul you. Prove it. Make the free throws. And, I mean, that's the thing. I just, Milwaukee, they run into a really tough opponent. And in my opinion, I think they're going to lose in six.
All right. We're going to stay in the Eastern Conference. We're going to go Boston and Toronto. Now, Toronto's already down 0-2. But still, Kennedy Miller, who you got?
Man, I thought Toronto would take this to start it, especially with Boston losing Gordon Hayward, too. I don't know. You can't really count the champs out, even though they don't have their superstar from last year. But I think Boston's going to take it, man. I said before, I think Boston is a sleeper to make the finals. Because another team that's well-coached, you got a young star in Jason Tatum, who might elevate himself to superstar status in these playoffs. And you know, another star in Jaylen Brown. Kemba Walker's really good. You know, and then, you know, if Marcus Smart hits 5 straight threes in a game, you know, then they're almost, you know, then you can just throw your hands up and say, what more can I do? So, I think Boston's going to take it. I think Toronto has got championship pedigree. They never feel that they're out of it. They were down 0-2 last year in the conference finals. But I think Boston is just, I think Boston is ready for this moment. So I'm going to roll with Boston.
I'm going to go with Toronto.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Toronto in 7.
Okay.
And I think, like you said, Toronto, they've got the championship pedigree, right? And they are extremely well coached. And I'll say that because a few years ago, well, not even a few years ago, last year, I thought very little of Nick Nurse. I won't even lie to you. I thought Nick Nurse was just some dude they had out there, right? Because at the end of ball games, you hand the ball to Kawhi. Do whatever, right? But this year, Nick Nurse has shown me he's a damn good basketball coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And given the fact they are back in the position where they are to potentially defend their title, lets me know that Nick Nurse can coach, and Nick Nurse has earned the benefit of the doubt for me. I think they'll be able to figure this out. And remember how I said earlier in the show that being down 0-2 isn't the same hole as it would be under normal circumstances?
Absolutely.
This is
being down 3-1.
Yeah, like, you know, at the end, this is just basketball at that point, right? Like, there's no home court advantage. We're just playing. If you get on a roll and you get going, you just play. And I think Boston is a really, really talented team. And I'll take a quick second to say, isn't it crazy how this year Boston is much less talented, but they are a much better team than they were last year?
Yep.
Like, subtract Kyrie Irving, subtract Terry Rozier, subtract Marcus Morris, subtract Al Horford. They are leaps and bounds better this year. And I think this plays more to Brad Stevens' liking because, you know, when Brad Stevens at Butler, he didn't have, like, extremely, extremely talented teams.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I think Brad Stevens had more talent than he knew what to do with. This team, I think, is more to his comfort, and I think he's able to coach them better and get done what he needs to get done. But all that being said, I never thought I'd say this, but I believe in Nick Nurse. I'm going Raptors 7. I never thought I'd say that.
Okay.
I never thought I'd say that. I really didn't. Moving on to the West. And Kennedy Miller's favorite team. The LA Clippers.
I knew you were going to say that.
Hey, man, I had to bother you for a quick second, man. The LA Clippers and the Denver Nuggets. This one tips off on Thursday. Kenny Miller, who you got winning the series?
Clippers in five. You know, I don't think the Nuggets can really do anything. Now, I will say, both of these teams kind of have the same problem in that they have a lot of depth and also been dealing with some injuries to some guys. So they don't really, you know, they've been kind of throwing out different rotations for most of the year and trying different things. Because the Nuggets have a lot of talent. I just don't know. I don't know how they're going to stop. I don't know if they have the wings to try and stop Kawhi and Paul George. The Mavericks didn't really either. But they had, a kid that's about to be a superstar. And Jokic is really good. Jamal Murray's been playing out of his mind. I don't know if those two will put the same threat that the Mavericks were able to do. Like, Jokic is a mismatch for him because, I mean, you're going to have Zubac and Montrezl Harrell to guard him. He should be able to get what he wants. But I feel like they can neutralize Jamal Murray. If Patrick Beverley plays, you can put Star Pat Bev on him. And if he's still cooking, you can put Paul George on him. You can put Kawhi on him. And you can put, a Marcus Morris on him. Like, you can throw so many bodies at Jamal Murray if you're the Clippers. And I think that's going to make it really tough for the Nuggets to really have an efficient offense. Now, I could be wrong. Nuggets could give them all they could get, and Michael Porter could turn into a star in front of our very eyes. I would love that. But if I'm realistically speaking, I think the Clippers in five.
I'm going to agree with you there, but I'm going to go Clippers in six.
Okay.
And the big reason, like you laid out all of the on-the-court reasons why you think that the Denver Nuggets won't be able to beat the LA Clippers. My big reason why they won't be able to is more so along the lines of, like, emotionally. Like, it takes a lot out of you to come back from 3-1. It takes a lot out of you to do what they just got done doing. And then they have a day or so to try to regroup, right? And then go back out there and play against one of the three best players on the damn planet on 4 or 5 days rest, and you have to do this every other day, right? Like, emotionally, I think they are probably spent. Like, because they gave every ounce of energy just to get to a game seven, let alone win it. And now you have to turn back around in 2 days and do it again. Like, and keep yourself at that same level of energy and same level of intensity. It's very, very difficult. Like, we've seen the Clippers have lulls in intensity, right? And so, in game, I want to say for the Clippers, they led by at least 20 points in games 3, 4, 5, and 6, right?
Yep.
Two of those four times, they blew that lead, right? And in game 6, they had to put Kawhi back in there, and, he had to finish it, right? In order for a Denver team to beat the LA Clippers 4 times, it's going to take that level of intensity they just had to come back from being down 3-1. And I don't think they're going to have that, right? And then on top of that, Kawhi Leonard versus Nikola Jokic, who's the best player? I'm going to do the straight back cornrows, man. That dude's a killer.
Yeah, he's really good.
Moving on. The last series. We don't even know who's going to fill this last slot yet. That's to be determined. We're going to go through it anyway. The LA Lakers, the one seed, versus either the Oklahoma City Thunder or the Houston Rockets. Who you got?
If it's the Houston Rockets, I think the Lakers win in 6. If it's the Oklahoma City Thunder, I think the Lakers win in 5. I think the Lakers win in 6 against the Rockets. I don't think that small ball is going to work. I think we're going to kill them on the rebounding, which is a reason why we beat Portland, because we killed them on the offensive boards. And then what I will say with the Rockets, small ball lineup, they are really feisty. They're really feisty. They get their hands on the ball a lot, especially when the big man gets it, when you try and post them up like Steven Adams. They're really feisty down there. They give a lot of multiple efforts
on the floor because they have to. They have to make up for their lack of size. I just think when the size that you have is maybe the most talented big man in the NBA, then it's going to be really tough on a guy like P.J. Tucker for a seven-game series to say, hey, you're going to have to go between guarding LeBron and Anthony Davis. You know what I mean? And, yeah, I think we won't be able to play our traditional lineup a lot with AD playing the four and either JaVale or Dwight playing the five. But I think this series is a big series where Markieff Morris comes in and plays a lot of minutes at the four to push AD to the five. Because AD is a seven-footer, but he's also mobile enough and quick enough to be able to get out to a shooter like P.J. Tucker, at least in my opinion. And so I think that's a lineup that you would see a lot. Now, obviously, not having Avery Bradley for this series would be as crucial, just like it was against Portland, to be able to put pressure on a guy like James Harden or Russell Westbrook. But I think the Lakers will still take him. If it's the Thunder, it's in five. You know, I feel like they don't have enough. They have a great leader in Chris Paul, good young piece in Shai Gilgeous, but I don't think the Thunder would even stand a chance. I think they'd be more happy that they beat the Rockets than having to try and beat the Lakers.
I'm going to go, if it's the Rockets, I'll go Lakers in six. And I think, for the record, I think the Rockets are going to win game seven tomorrow night. I think, you know, there's just too much on the line for them to lose in the first round. Too. So I think they'll be ready to play, and I think they'll get it done. But going into a series with a team like the Lakers, I think their biggest issue is going to be the lack of size, right? The lack of size, and on top of that, this small ball, shoot a bunch of threes offense only works when you're making a bunch of shots. Because if you're not, and it's a whole lot of one-and-done possessions, and you're having issues on the board with an Anthony Davis, with a JaVale McGee, with a Dwight Howard, with a LeBron James, for that matter, the other team has a whole lot of more extra possessions, right?
Yeah.
Given LeBron James' championship experience, given all those other different things, right? I'm going to have to go with the Lakers. And given the fact that, damn it, I don't trust Mike D'Antoni.
If they had seen us in the first round, there would be real potential for an upset. But if you saw towards the end of that first round, you saw LeBron start to get into a rhythm shooting. Because, I mean, for most of the bubble, even, you know, from the first game against the Clippers, he was not shooting the ball. And you could tell he wasn't trying to shoot the ball much. And so you started to see, it was one of those games where he hit like three or four threes. And you could tell he started to get his rhythm. And ever since, and for the series, he shot 40% from three. He shot 58% from the field. He shot 40% from three. And it's the second time ever a player has averaged a triple-double for a series. Who was the first time you asked? LeBron James.
Was that our first unnecessary LeBron stat of the night?
That was an unnecessary LeBron stat. You also saw Anthony Davis get his mid-range down. And so I think, you know, the recipe would be good if we were reeling and if we weren't scoring the ball well. But we were a top 10 defense for a reason. You know, we played really good defense. And then if we're scoring on the other end, we're practically unbeatable. And so with the Rockets, it sounds good in theory to be able to space the floor and have all these shooters and go small ball and do all this. But when you're playing a team with two top six players in the world and those two players are over 6'9", and might end up being the two biggest guys on the court, that's going to be a problem. And then you factor in a guy like JaVale McGee, factor in a guy like Dwight Howard, you know, and they're going to kill the possession battle. And if the Rockets, like you said, if they're not hitting shots, then some of those games are going to be some long nights.
I couldn't agree more. Kennedy Miller, it appears that me and you, brother, we are out of time here, my man.
Yes, sir. It's been a good one.
Hey, man, it's always good to hang out with you, my man. You know, even though we got to record this up in damn 10, 11 at night, me and you still find a way to make this work, my dog. Let the folks know at home they can find you on Twitter, Instagram, all that, dog.
You can find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_, and that's _Kennedy.
as in the former president, John F., and the former wrestler, Mr. Kennedy, Kennedy Miller underscore.
All right, all right. You can find me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Tom, S as in Sarah, M as in Margaret. For Kennedy Miller, my name is Alex Goodwin. This has been the Game Plan Podcast. We will see you next time.